Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Ramzi and the beach refugee camp, that is a reference to the place where a deal was made, a handshake or a signature was signed, something making peace and beginning at least the forging of a coalition government with the Palestinian Authority, Fatah, and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And what's the status of that agreement at this point?
Well, the status of the agreement is that both parties agreed on the, because it has a different constituency, many of its supporters are quite religious, and they do not necessarily, you know, they needed language that appeals to them at a different level. So they provided a set of conditions that would appeal to their constituents, but at the same time, the practical implications of it is that they too are willing to go for the two-state solutions. And perhaps this is the real danger of the agreement as far as Israel is concerned.
Responsibility, which usually means take it on the chin with some missile strikes and stuff in response, even if it's somebody else that does it, right? So they're trying to act like a responsible state, as responsible prison guards inside the juvenile prison that is the Gaza Strip, basically, correct?
That's right. And in fact, the second day to the signing of the unity agreement between Hamas and Fatah, Israeli forces conducted an incursion into the northern Gaza Strip, perhaps hoping that Hamas would retaliate, and then the whole propaganda war is going to start saying, wait a minute, you've just signed an agreement with a terrorist organization and so forth and so on. So the whole, provocation thing is very much related to Israel's intention of constantly creating a Palestinian boogeyman. In the case of Hamas, if Hamas manages to navigate itself out of that stereotype, again, it's going to be a very tough position for Benjamin Netanyahu, although personally, I think the Israeli government is very, very resourceful at worst. Yet at the same time, Netanyahu and his Palestinian partner, whether it was Arafat, now Abbas, kind of really maintained the charade of being, peacemakers, constantly meeting, shaking hands, and that sort of thing.
Right.
It kind of really...
I'm sorry, I have to stop
culture.
You right there, Ramzi. We got to take this dang break here. Their heartbreak's built in, but we'll be right back, everybody, with Ramzi Baroud from PalestineChronicle.com. One sec.
Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betray their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm talking with Ramzi Baroud, editor of Palestine Chronicle at PalestineChronicle.com and a frequent writer at AntiWar.com. Palestinian unity, hope and gloom in the beach refugee camp. And so, let me ask you this. Now, Ramzi, and I may be all over the place in this interview. I never know quite what to think about all this stuff. But I saw an essay by a writer. Well, I don't want to get you in a fight with anybody. I saw an essay by a writer, a Palestinian writer, who says that the two-state solution really is just a trap. It'll only be, if it ever happens at all, it'll be one step up, maybe half a step up from the occupation as it exists now. It'll never be a state in the sense that any other nation state in the world is a state. Netanyahu has explained what an independent Palestinian state would look like to him, and it's just like the occupation, basically. Well, you know, Area C security zones, etc., like that, and how ultimately, if they did a two-state solution, in practice, what it would amount to is legitimization of what is now considered by almost everyone on Earth to be completely illegitimate, and that is the permanent occupation of the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. And so, what do you think about that? That it's such a half a loaf deal. It'll make it, it'll short circuit real attempts that could create a more workable solution, a better solution of some kind, and replace it with basically a status quo, a stronger status quo that'll be much harder to dislodge.
I do agree with his opinion. I think there are two realities here. One that exists intellectually and politically. You know, what we talk about over radio, what we write about in newspapers, and what we blog about. And there is the other reality of what is actually happening in the ground in Palestine. To talk about two-state solutions and actually trying to understand the topography of the occupation, the demographics, how involved both Jews and Arabs are in their everyday life. To talk about two-state solution that is going to guarantee some sort of racial supremacy of one or create some sort of segregation between ethnicities and races is absolutely impossible. No one can look at the map of the West Bank and Jerusalem and Israel. I mean, just look at the Palestinians within Israel itself. Nearly 2 million Palestinians living in Israel. These are Palestinians who have never left after Palestinians were ethnically cleansed in 1948. It's just an impossible scenario to create a two-state solution that is based on ethnicity. The fact is, this is something that we talk about because politically, the Americans, the Europeans, the UN, they are politically bankrupt. They don't really have anything else. They know that the two-state solution is over. It only exists on paper. It only exists at some sort of a intellectual level, but it doesn't exist in reality. But to accept the fact that it no longer exists, it means to have to contend with a very harsh reality for them, and that is for Palestinians and Israelis to coexist somehow. And for that to happen, Netanyahu has decided that this is tantamount to the destruction of the Jewish state, and nobody wants to venture out to that level. So we talk about something that doesn't exist because we are afraid to embrace and to discuss the reality on the ground and what is in fact possible at this point.
Which is what? Because it seems like if things play out in the obvious way where at some point there are just so many more Palestinians than Israeli Jews, that at that point it will at least be a real, if it's not already, I understand how people would say it is already, I'm not saying it's not, but at that point it'll be basically consensus that Israel has annexed the West Bank, that it is part of Israel proper, and now it's a minority Jewish population ruling over the Palestinians. At that point, if it's a one state, if all the pressure is on the Israeli Jews to go ahead and side with democracy over having a Jewish majority and a permanent Jewish state there, or permanent majority Jewish run state there, won't there just be a civil war because they're not going to go for that?
Well, I hope not. I mean, it's the moral thing to do. I mean, imagine if...
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I just fear the worst, that they would say, actually, we'll just do another Nakba if it comes to that, because we're sure as hell not going to give you majority power here.
That's true, and we understand that this is something that has to be phased out. It's something that cannot be imposed, and it requires a great deal of cultural dialogue, political dialogue, and it has to be phased out on the course maybe of an entire generation. But the issue is this. Currently, right now, between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea, there are Jews and Arabs who are living and sharing the same space. They are sharing water. They are sharing the hills of the West Bank and the Galilee. They are everywhere. I mean, not one single town in Israel, and not one single place in the West Bank that is vacant of a mix of Arabs and Jews. But the problem is the kind of laws that govern this mass of people is unfair and it's racist, and this is the issue. So it's really it may sound appear to be a giant task. But in reality, it's all about rewriting the laws to give each citizen, each person, each resident of that space between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea equal rights. It's really that much of a challenge. And of course, the mentality that rules Israel right now, that of Netanyahu and others, will not accept that. But just the fact that they will not accept that, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't push for it. It's the same way that we pushed for the end of apartheid in South Africa, despite the fact that all odds were against us, and yet somehow those who pushed for that sort of change prevailed at the end of the day. This is the kind of change we hope to achieve in Palestine as well.
Right. Well, I mean, just look at the fact that we haven't even wasted time talking about these stupid talks, because they're nothing but fake, stupid talks anyway. Why even waste time talking about that? You know what I'll talk about instead? I'll make a suggestion. That instead of apartheid, or interchangeable with apartheid, but I'm saying since everybody wants to cry boo-hoo about apartheid, you know what would be about the term apartheid, not the reality of it, which is worth crying about. They cry about the term. What would be more effective in America anyway would be to make direct comparisons to the old South and the old Jim Crow way of doing things, because that's one thing that Americans are actually really proud of, is that it's not like that anymore. We got a lot of racism, we got a lot of problems, but Jim Crow is over. And if you compare it to that, it's a direct comparison. And Americans, they can't even find South Africa on a map, dude, anyway. So you might as well say, this is like Mississippi in the bad old days. Now do you understand? And they will understand.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Scott. And, you know, but it's also important to remember that it took Americans a long, long time to reach where they are right now. And still there are so many challenges to overcome.
Right.
So that's why
Americans' opinions about this situation is pretty much going to have to change before very much can change over there, you know?
That's right. I agree.
And it's just, you know, and I'll tell you another thing too, as long as I'm telling you stuff instead of asking you stuff. I think most Americans don't understand that there's an occupation of that. There is a war, and then this territory that was foreign territory has been occupied, but the people still live there. They're just under a foreign martial law for almost 50 years now. I don't think they understand that. I think they think that Palestine is already the country next door. So I think that there's a lot of, maybe they're confused about why you would need a two-state solution or whatever, but they never had anyone iron it out for them. So I think a lot of education on the very basic level is really important, you know, in
these
borders.
There's no question about it, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody else in the world pretty much gets it, as far as I can tell from what I read, but around here, no.
That is true. I'm talking to you from London right now, and you never have to contend with these kind of questions, the kind of debates that we have in universities, in the media. Much of this is already understood. The debate is at a much more advanced level. In the U.S., it remains a very big challenge. And I could go on and to talk about the media and the propaganda and all of that, but there's a lot of work that we need to do ourselves to change that.
Right. And I'm sorry for saving this till the end, and we're almost completely out of time, but in just about half a minute or so, could you talk about the humanitarian situation in Gaza and whether it's gotten any better at all?
It actually got worse with the after the Sisi overthrew Mohammed Morsi and punished Hamas for their affiliation with the Muslim Brotherhood. So that kind of line that available respite for Palestinians was closed when Sisi came to power. The situation got a lot worse. Now the hope is that because of Sisi's affiliation with Mahmoud Abbas in the West Bank, hopefully there will be a little bit of some opening, some margin where he would allow for the border between Gaza and Egypt to open up.
Great. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott.
Sorry, we have to leave it here. That's Ramzi Baroud, everybody. He writes at PalestineChronicle.com, and you can find him at antiwar.com today. Palestinian Unity, Hope and Gloom in the Beach Refugee Camp. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today, corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson, available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.